Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 133 of Unblocking Crypto. How we had a big thing happen last week. 94% of all the Bitcoin is officially mined now. So only 6% left over the next 100 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that it's weird. Like, if you explain to somebody that doesn't understand Bitcoin very much, they're like, oh, there's only 6% left. That's not going to take very long. Well, it gets halved every 4 years. Like, it's actually going to take almost 10 times as long as it took to get the first 94% to get the last six. So yeah, it is getting, I haven't calculated what it takes to get to 95%, but it's a pretty long way.
Yeah, I know it's 19.74 million already mined out of the 21 million. I have not done that calculation either, but my guess is it's probably 15, 20 years, maybe. I don't know.
I'd have to look at it. I mean, another 1%, you know, you're talking a couple, 210,000 Bitcoin at 450 a day for the next 1,000, 1,200 days. Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a while, bro. It's like, when you, the difference between 50 Bitcoin per day and 3 1/8 Bitcoin per day, it's a pretty drastic difference. So how they decide, or how Satoshi decided to roll out the mining and cut it in half and go from 50 per block to 3 1/8 per block, is neat. Like, it just seems to be working. I don't know if you could just set that up at any interval and it work as well. There may be a way to make it work better, but like, you kind of have to nail the adoption curve in order to get this right. You know, if you're still printing a ton of Bitcoins, then the Bitcoin price isn't worth very much. Maybe it's not that exciting, and maybe you don't end up with these hyperbolic bull runs. And if you do it too slow, you know, same problem. Like, it's pretty, I don't know, I'd have to run those models in my head to like really figure out what I think. But you know, you kind of, in 15 years, you kind of have to generate the majority of these Bitcoin, and then before you get to the next halving, it needs to really be locked in. Otherwise, you know, 225 Bitcoin per day, if Bitcoin hasn't caught on, it probably won't, because the mining benefits are so low. Now, I guess there'd just be less miners, so the profitability might still be there. But, you know, we're at $60,000 per Bitcoin right now, and we're in like fear on the fear and greed index. So, I mean, you know, we're in pretty good shape price wise, and you know, it's one of those pieces where, if the distribution of Bitcoin, or the new Bitcoin mined per block was different, I don't know how the adoption would roll out, if it would be the same or different. My instinct says it would be very different.
Yeah, and the hash rate has just hit a new all-time high, right? So it's not like things are trending down at all. It's still trending up. Everybody still wants to be a part of this, and they're adding more and more resources to do that.
Yeah, I did see some of the miners. Well, I think Hut 8 had some pretty bad quarter when they released it, because they're public, so they released their financials. So we're still we got to be at the tail end of miners capitulating after the halving, and those miners that are not profitable realizing it and dropping out or being bought by another company for their power resources or power contracts and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, we got to be close to the tail end. I mean, we're talking, it was April, we're at the end of August. I mean, you know, 4 or 5 months is plenty of time for your profit, for you to realize, oh crap, we made some changes and they're not working. The hash rate keeps going up. Our daily Bitcoin received is dropping still. So I would assume we got to be getting close to these miners, you know, ending their selling and stuff like that. So I'm ready for it, quite frankly.
Well, I'm not sure if you saw, but Marathon Digital just bought 250 million of Bitcoin by doing kind of the same thing that MicroStrategy did, by issuing convertible senior notes.
Hey man, It's finally happening after 3 years of Michael Saylor showing everybody how you can get the fixed income world exposure to Bitcoin, even though they can't buy equities and they can't buy ETFs and they can't buy Bitcoin spot. If you distribute convertible notes, if you do an offering, that's, I mean, every one of his has been overreceived, and he starts at 500 million and he ends up at 800 million or a billion. So the similar scientifics, the anybody that's got MicroStrategy, that's got Bitcoin on their balance sheet in a major way, they're starting to do it. And so the company, what is it, Metaplanet, that Dylan LeClaire is a part of, they started doing it in Japan. You know, they're tiny, but that's all. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's El Salvador or not. Like, once somebody proves the thesis of, hey, this works, somebody else catches on to it. And I mean, for some reason, it took like 3 freaking years for companies to understand what MicroStrategy was doing. And now, yeah, okay, you may not be the first to do it, but you can still be in that first tranche and get a hold of some of this fixed income money. And so, yeah, I think more companies will be doing that. And, or at least, you know, I listened to the Fold CEO talk on a podcast. They're sitting on 1,000 Bitcoin and then they're going public. So guess what they're going to do? I mean, they're on like a Bitcoin standard as a company, and their whole company, they're finally to a point now where if you want to be on a Bitcoin standard, you can do it through Fold. So to me, like, once that starts to go, maybe it's 2 or 3 years, you know, things tend to go faster after that first kind of cohort goes through. But man, if they can get through there and start doing that stuff, I could, you know, it's Bitcoin. So it's these little bites. And then before long, you know, you're starting to really eat this elephant. And you're talking 5-6 companies now that are into it. So, yeah, I think everybody's got to pay attention. And if you're not, you're probably dead. I mean, you're probably so busy trying to keep up with inflation and work and employees and disruptors and things like that, and that you just kind of have your head in the sand, and you're not able to spend the time you need to spend. But man, it works. And if we hit another bull run, like we kind of anticipate we will, I mean, and we've only got 4 months left of this year to get it started. So it's, you know, I'm still surprised that it's not here yet. And once we hit a little price escalation and we get into all new highs again, I'd imagine we see a little bit of some people rush to get through the door.
Yeah. So speaking of milestones that are happening here in this last week, another big one that just happened was BlackRock surpassed Grayscale. And this is for assets under management for publicly listed crypto products. So BlackRock just went to like $22 billion since what, February? So it's 6 months or so. Grayscale, I think, has just over 20 at this point, because they just keep having so many outflows. This year alone, they've had over $18 billion in outflows. They're still sitting at almost the same as what BlackRock is, which is crazy.
My first instinct there is BlackRock is the only company that could do that. Like, you know, it's not like BlackRock's the first company to overcome Grayscale. It's like, now I think BlackRock's just in the lead, and I don't think anybody's going to catch them. I mean, it's the same thing with MicroStrategy. There's not a lot of businesses that could catch MicroStrategy if they wanted to, as far as holding Bitcoin or if you just wanted to go digital assets in general. So to me, like, Grayscale's, we talked about how dumb Grayscale's strategy has been and is as far as maintaining their position. But yeah, I mean, I don't, as long as BlackRock doesn't, a lot of what they hold is not theirs. It's just custody for people that are buying through their ETF. So it's not like BlackRock could decide to sell their Bitcoin. You know, it requires their clients to sell the Bitcoin. So yeah, good luck catching them. It's a lot. It's too much, especially if, you know, we hit $100,000 for Bitcoin. I mean, now you're way behind, because you're still sitting in dollars and BlackRock is sitting in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what Michael Saylor talked about in his Bitcoin keynote, right? There's not many companies, there's not many countries that once they start doing what he has done, there can't be a lot of other people sitting in the same seats or around the same table as him. So we're getting to the point where it's theoretically BlackRock and Grayscale, and it doesn't look like Grayscale is going to be able to compete with BlackRock long term.
I mean, it would be real tough. You run out of Bitcoin.
Yeah. So I know regulation has been a huge topic for us this year. Did you see that the Democratic Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has promised that we're going to be passing some crypto regulation by the end of this year?
I've read a headline of that, and I will believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I was like, huh, that's interesting, since you guys can't even get SAB 121 repealed, and now all of a sudden we're going to have this crypto regulation that everybody's going to agree on. All right, let's see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk of like Kamala Harris and that campaign resetting the relationship with the crypto, and we've talked about the roundtables they've had that haven't gone super friendly. And number one, Congress doesn't really pass legislation anymore. They kind of wait until the government shutdown deadlines are upon them or passed, and then they pass a giant $1.5 trillion omnibus that has everything stuffed in it, right? It's not like they're going through and passing constant like specific legislation and getting things done. So my expectation is they wouldn't. I guess crypto, a comprehensive crypto legislation would have the benefit of the fact that no one's passionately anti-crypto. Like exactly. No voters are. It's not going to cost you an election to pass some reasonable crypto regulation. You know, people, nobody's so ticked off that you would regulate the crypto industry, especially if it was a light touch, you know, guided hand kind of thing. So it would have a shot, but they just can't get anything done. So I don't expect them to. And then, you know, you talk about the blue team. One, like you said, Biden vetoed the overthrowing of SAB 121, even though it passed both sides of Congress. So I doubt that this would work. If it does work, great. If it's like we need to play catch up on the crypto side, we need to get this done, and they all get together and do it, that would be fine. But they're just the Democrat side just released their platform. It's a 92-page document. No mention of crypto. No mention of Bitcoin. Nothing about digital assets. No mention of CBDCs. So it's not on their radar, you know. Yeah. You've got it's so it's not. Yes, they didn't say they're going to shut down crypto in their platform, which is, I suppose, that's a step forward. But I mean, the only thing that the blue team does that's pro crypto is print money, but the red team does that too. So, yeah. You know, to me, I'm not seeing what I need to see from a government that's trying to buddy up to an industry.
Yeah, what's interesting, so I don't know if you saw Coin Center, which is a crypto think tank. They just got the go-ahead to sue the U.S. Treasury and the IRS again because there was a really controversial tax reporting rule, which was like an amendment to, I think it was Section 6050I. It was part of that $1.2 trillion infrastructure Investments and Job Act of 2021. Mm-hmm. What it did is it required crypto users who exchange digital assets worth more than $10,000 to collect and share personal information with each other and with the authorities. So like if you and I exchanged $10,000, we would have to send each other our name, our social, and a bunch of other information. And then we'd also have to send it to the IRS and U.S. Treasury or whatever to do all this. So it's kind of got snuck in there. And at the time, it sounded as if there wasn't really enough information to decide on whether or not this was unjust and kind of a government overreach. And now one of the judges has said, okay, it's here. You can go back after this now. So yeah, we'll kind of see what happens. But I mean, crazy little stuff like this is like, if you want crypto to survive and be part of a thriving industry, why would you do this? It makes no sense.
Right. I mean, you're, especially since you've got, so let's just use Bitcoin because that's where I'm at. Bitcoin's like a property when it comes to tax code, right? I mean, it's not a currency, and it's not an equity and things like that. So if you have property and like, if you want to trade your $15,000 truck for a $15,000 boat, you can do that. And you don't have to get all the KYC information from the person that you're trading with. Same deal. If you sell a used boat for 20 grand, you have to do the bill of sale, but you're not collecting their KYC information and social security number and information like that. You're just getting enough to do the bill of sale and make it a legal transaction and move on. So you're almost, you know, in conflict with yourself. If you're like, oh yeah, this is a monetary thing, you need to treat it like money. And you need to act like a bank if you're going to receive more than $10,000. It's like, you know, pick one. It's also crazy unrealistic. They've inflated things so much that $10,000 is a very low bar. You know, yeah. You want to buy some furniture, some appliances, stuff like that, you can get to 10 grand pretty easy. So I'm not sure if that's one transaction or if that's a calendar year or whatever it is, but yeah, still, I mean, if you're not buying cups of coffee and, you know, $100 this or $200 that, I mean, it's getting to 10,000, especially if you're a business that wants to trade in Bitcoin or accept Bitcoin, you could exceed that number all the time. And then you're just preventing your customers are going to be less likely to do business with you because you're like, okay, well, now you're holding my social security number. The federal government just got hacked and every single social security number of every single person just got released into whatever dark web because you just can't not be hacked. Like unless you're a voting machine, you're hackable, right? Mm-hmm. Everything is susceptible to getting found out. And so for me, it's dangerous to give your social security number to somebody, especially associated with Bitcoin. And because a bad actor gets a hold of it and now they know, oh, this guy's got plenty of Bitcoin. He just spent $10,000 on buying this car from this guy. So yeah, I think that's crap. I think they should fight it. I'm glad that they exist.
Yeah. So I think the other thing that I saw too was, speaking of unclear regulations, the SEC had a rule, I think back in 2022, that was aimed at decentralized exchanges, and they wanted decentralized exchanges to be compliant just like centralized exchanges. So right. Coinbase is kind of going after the SEC to say, this doesn't make any sense. This is totally irrational. It just opened up a couple months ago for comments again. So it's back. We'll see what happens. But just kind of goes back to one of those things where, hey, the last 4 years has been no clarity on regulation for crypto. It doesn't seem to be getting better right now. There's more people fighting it, thank goodness. But for the blue team not to come out and say, here's what we want to try to accomplish is crazy to me.
Yeah. And, you know, if you think about who's into Bitcoin in Washington, you know, there's Ro Khanna from the blue team, and he's trying to build some, you know, a little bit more of a groundswell. But that's it for the blue team. You know, the red team's got Cynthia Lummis and, you know, there's quite a few others behind her. I mean, Tim Scott was, like I said, at the Bitcoin conference, I think there were 7 or 8 Congress people and only one was a Democrat. So, you know, it's just easier to find Republican pro crypto or at least crypto neutral Republicans than it is to find Democrats. Now, a lot of that, I think, has to do with Elizabeth Warren and her seniority and power in Congress and all that kind of stuff. Nobody wants to go against her, even if they personally are balanced or pro digital assets. They don't want to go up against that seniority. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. They need to do it quick because you only got a couple months left before this election happens, and I think it's going to matter. You know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Some other interesting news that I saw, the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange withdrew their Bitcoin ETF options proposal, which worried me for a second, but then I just realized they're going to follow in the COB steps and kind of refile here probably shortly. So it's not going away. It's just they're updating it and adding a lot more information. So it's hopefully it'll still happen. We're relying on the SEC to make a decision here, which they can do stuff overnight and then they can do stuff in a decade.
Oh, yeah. If they want to hurry, we saw it with the Bitcoin ETF, man. It was like on Friday, they decided that they were going to move forward. And on Wednesday, we were trading Bitcoin on on the exchanges and through the ETFs. So, you know, screw those guys.
I also saw that the SEC did approve a leveraged MicroStrategy ETF. I don't know if you saw this one. It's instead of MSTR, it's MSTX. Defiance ETF is the one that has done it, but it is aiming to provide 175% of the daily return from MicroStrategy, which is kind of interesting.
I think that would be a lot of day trader types, because MicroStrategy is so volatile that would attract a lot of volume. I don't know that it'll attract a ton of funds, but yeah. The volatility is definitely there.
Yeah, I mean, it is. We've joked that MicroStrategy was pretty much a Bitcoin ETF in hiding, right? That most people could get into if they couldn't actually get to the Bitcoin ETFs with certain asset managers. And now you have a kind of a way to do an options-ish type or a perpetuals type of play with a Bitcoin-like ETF.
Yeah, it's like a leveraged ETF on top of a leveraged Bitcoin ETF. So I'd be curious what if somebody would run the numbers to see what that leverage on the underlying Bitcoin price is. But yeah, like once you're out there, man, like they can really play some games. I saw that I can't remember, maybe Van Eck was coming out with a crypto composite ETF. So Bitcoin ETF, Bitcoin spot ETF, Ethereum spot ETF, MicroStrategy, Coinbase, you know, a bunch of different things like that in one ETF. You know, it's all about diversity, even though you've got, you know, there's public miners in there and everything else. So, you know, if you're right about public, or if you're right about Bitcoin mining being a good sector to invest in, but you pick Hut 8 instead of Marathon or CleanSpark, then you're toast. So if you buy an ETF, you spread the risk of one of the public miners blowing up.
Well, I don't know if you saw Franklin Templeton's news. It was kind of, I mean, we talked about it in the past, trying to do a crypto top 10 fund. Well, they just are coming out. They just filed for a crypto index ETF that they're calling Easy Peasy as the four letters. And it is initially going to hold Bitcoin and Ethereum. It literally just got filed, but I think it will continue to add other things as well once they get approved by the SEC, which my guess is if anything's next, it's probably going to be Solana.
Yeah, I think I saw a headline that said that the Solana ETF proposals got withdrawn yesterday. I didn't look too deep into it because I feel like, and without the SEC saying withdraw those, there's no reason to. So it may be a technicality, but I would expect.
I think they're probably getting modified like everything else.
Yeah, that's what I figure. I mean, like, there's no reason to withdraw and just give up, pack it up. I mean, Solana seems to have some legs to it, but Easy Peasy is a pretty hilarious ticker symbol. And, you know, but if you're an ETF provider, like, man, if we could get a Solana ETF in there, now we have Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, we can get pretty good exposure for our clients in crypto in general. And, you know, if you can custody Bitcoin and Ethereum, you can custody Solana. So kind of the hard work's already over. The Ethereum ETF performance hasn't been awesome, so maybe it would give you a little bit of hesitation to jump into Solana, but, you know, still it benefits you to be first, even if you're really early.
Yeah, well, I think Ethereum definitely has some downtimes lately, but they've now hit, I think, probably the lowest gas fees in 5 years, which is usually a signal that things are about to kind of take off in the future. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, I mean, I think at the same time, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana are definitely the top three. They're not all going to be correlated, but so it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be in one versus the other. Everybody's looking for diversification. And I mean, if you're going to diversify, those are the three you diversify into from a safety perspective.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it's funny because we kind of talk about philosophical side of Bitcoin and crypto and the use case and all of that. But when you talk about the ETFs, it's like, okay, forget all of that stuff. And it's strictly about the investment thesis of institutions and how they like to enter. So, you know, you kind of have to put that on the back burner and only focus on what institutions like and how they like to invest. This is how they like to do it. And I mean, it's pretty obvious that big investors and institutions want exposure to Bitcoin in a big way, and maybe Ethereum in a smaller way. The 13Fs were released, and Norway and Sweden central banks have exposure to MicroStrategy. There's almost 2,000 holders of the Bitcoin spot ETFs, which is up about 25% from where they were at the end of Q1. And of them, there's 44% of them added to their position, 22% held, 21% decreased, and 13% exited. So in a period of time where Bitcoin price isn't skyrocketing, it's honestly super boring right now from a price standpoint. I mean, we've been trading between 30 and 70 since January. I mean, it may be the most boring year I can recall price-wise. But 44, almost half of them, two-thirds of them either held or added to their position. So that's pretty solid. So yeah, if you're thinking like an institution and how institutions like to invest, yeah, I think there's a good alignment with digital assets and investment houses.
Yeah, so speaking of large investment houses, Vanguard is the number two asset manager behind BlackRock. Their new CEO, which actually came from BlackRock, and he was one of the guys that was instrumental in getting some of the Bitcoin ETFs approved at BlackRock, finally came out and said they are not planning on doing any crypto ETFs. So they're going to be, I guess, not creating their own. I still don't know if they're going to allow their customers to have access to them, because, I mean, they have $9 trillion in assets. So that is a lot of money sitting there that is not being even touched by any of the crypto at all these days.
Yeah, I mean, Vanguard was pretty adamant about how they're not going to get involved in this. You know, we'll see, money talks. But
and then they fired their CEO and brought somebody in from the outside, which is something that they've never done before.
Right. So we'll see. I'm you know, Bitcoin doesn't need Vanguard.
Yeah. Well, some interesting things too. Coinbase is actually going back to Hawaii. I don't think I realized this, but since 2017, Coinbase left Hawaii because Hawaii required any company doing digital assets to hold $1 for every $1 of digital assets their customers held. And they're like, this makes no sense. No company can do this. So Coinbase left, everybody else left. That has since changed. Coinbase is now going back. I think Robinhood actually went back last month too. So Hawaii is waking back up to the real world.
They had to hold a dollar for every dollar that their customers held in self-custody or on the platform?
So the way that I understand it is that if you had a dollar in Coinbase and you were in Hawaii, Coinbase had to hold another dollar in USD. So if you had a dollar in Bitcoin, they had to hold a dollar in USD just for that amount of digital assets you had. So if you hadn't bought $1 million of Bitcoin, Coinbase would have to hold $1 million in cash to be compliant with Hawaii.
And if Bitcoin went up, if Bitcoin doubled and went to $2 million, they would have to hold $2 million.
Correct.
So they were like basically a US dollar ETF denominated in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
they had to buy and sell dollars based on the price of the underlying asset. That's pretty dumb. That's not smart. So yeah, but that would suck if you're in Hawaii, because Coinbase is very easy to use.
Yeah, well, that's changing now. So now Hawaiians will have access to that. You mentioned Norway earlier too. I was reading about their sovereign wealth fund. They have been buying a bunch of Bitcoin stocks. I think the total amount is probably almost 4% of their entire fund is on Bitcoin related stocks, which is right around that 5% number that we keep saying everybody's going to go to at a minimum. And they keep adding to it. MicroStrategy, Block, Marathon Digital are kind of the big ones. What's interesting is because Norway's pretty much, they're selling their oil and their reserves, and they do this for the country. So what they've broken it down to is that every Norwegian citizen holds the equivalent of $27 of Bitcoin per person based on this sovereign wealth fund. So kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a neat way to look at it.
South Korea, they have a public pension fund as well, and they have been busy buying companies that are related to Bitcoin too. So they just spent $34 million buying MicroStrategy and then another $45 million buying Coinbase. So the rest of the world is seeing this is going to be something, or hoping that the U.S. follows suit at some point and realizes how big this is.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the reasons why it's so weird to me that we're at 60,000 and a 30 on the fear to greed index and super fearful. Like, how is this news? So this news typically in a bull market where, like, even bad news, the price goes up, would really impact price. And it doesn't seem to be impacting price much at all. Mm-mm. I don't know what that means, but there's a whole lot of buying going on through these ETFs. And I know there's still probably 15 or 20% of the total global Bitcoin volume per day, but the signal that's being sent is pretty strong that big money's flowing into Bitcoin. You know, I think in the 20 ramp up, the theme was the institutions are coming, and they never really showed up. Like MicroStrategy came busting through the door and then nobody followed behind them. Well, now, you know, they can kind of peek through the door and see if it's safe on the other side. And now they can come in. And I mean, like Goldman Sachs came as $420 million position in the Bitcoin ETFs. That sounds huge. It's nothing for Goldman Sachs. So
they're coming.
Yeah, so you put a bunch of those institutions together and you get them more and more comfortable. Like Goldman Sachs is $420 million comfortable in August of 24. You know, come May of 25, maybe they're $4 billion more comfortable. And so, and then everybody else has to respond too. So, you know, I it's tough to be patient, but it's not like these guys are going to jump in and then jump right back out. So it is just a matter of time before we really start to see things flowing into Bitcoin and then the price escalating from that.
Yeah. So some other interesting news that I saw, El Salvador continues to be in the news. They just got a $1.6 billion investment for their Bitcoin city. And it came through a company called Yelport, which I think is a Turkish holding company. They're investing that entire $1.6 billion. They will help co-run two of the ports. One port will be kind of where they put the Bitcoin city, and it's been almost abandoned at this point. And they're going to be a part of this for the next 50 years. So they'll co-run it for 50 years, and then not sure what's going to happen. But that's huge for El Salvador to get $1.6 billion from somebody that wants to help grow this entire ecosystem too.
Yeah, and it's not China. I feel like China is usually the guys that are investing in ports. And then when the country can't pay its bills, now they own a port in every country. So yeah, I don't know the details of that deal, but anytime you see a $1 billion investment involved in a Bitcoin initiative, even if it's not Bitcoin directly, I would view that as a very positive sign.
Yeah. So Brazil's been in the news here recently too. Mercado Bitcoin, which is, I think, one of the largest banks down there, just launched a crypto collateralization loan with flexible liquidations. So it is Bitcoin and Ethereum only right now. You can get up to 30% of the value loaned to you at 1.39% a month, which is pretty low from that perspective. And then the liquidations don't happen automatically like in a smart contract. So they are looked at on a case-by-case basis if something does happen. So that's a big deal. I mean, to be able to loan your crypto out and get cash or something to do something else with. And I think they're allowing people to buy more crypto with that, which would cause some problems if they keep doing that over and over again, but we'll see what happens.
It's all fun and games as the price is going up. That's when the price goes down and that liquidation cascades and wipes out everybody. But as much as I would like to think everybody's smart enough to not do that again, they will do that again. So hopefully there's some protection against that.
Nicaragua is in the news too. And I would say nothing's changed with the U.S. citizen that's being held by them, but they are proposing to have a bill to regulate the crypto industry by September, which is kind of quick considering that's not too far away at this point. Now it still will have to go through all the government hoopla and get passed, but that's kind of a big deal considering that that country has pretty much earmarked crypto as the reason that they're struggling. So it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen there. I mean, the other thing they did too is they just froze about $50 million in crypto wallets that were based on the End Bad Governance protest going on over there. So sound kind of familiar to what happened in Canada.
Yeah, you know, I think we're in kind of an interesting time. Countries seem to be picking sides on how authoritarian they're going to be. And I feel like the ones that pick really authoritarian first are going to be on the losing side. So I'd rather them do that than America do that. So let them go ahead and make those calls and we can watch it.
Yeah, Iran had some interesting news too. They are now offering a $20 bounty for anyone to snitch on illegal crypto miners, which is kind of funny because Iran banned crypto mining in 2021 and they brought it back once the US put sanctions on them. Now they believe in it. They don't want people to do it if they don't get government approval and the government gets a cut of it, kind of thing.
Right. So, yeah, that makes sense. Like, you need to shut it down until you watch other people make money on it. You know, it's like the legalization of THC in states like California and Washington did really well. So then everybody else like, oh, there's a lot of tax money here. We should do that too. So, you know, but it's not just individual people that get greedy. It's governments too.
Well, even the IMF, who I think views Bitcoin as a competition to what their stronghold is in the world. They are calling for increased electricity taxes on all crypto miners and AI data centers worldwide. So they're saying up to about 85% more, and it has to be worldwide. Otherwise, miners just leave one country and go to the one that isn't enforcing it. And it will theoretically create $5.2 billion of more revenue globally, which you think is a lot, but that's nothing for most of these countries to just print in a couple of hours at this point, right? So, like, I don't know. It's frustrating to see that happen. And all the other stuff that you see is how mining is actually saving a lot of these grids. And now IMF is saying, oh, yeah, mining is a problem. You need to prevent miners from doing this and tax them even higher, which is going to make it probably unsustainable for a lot of the miners.
Well, not only that, I mean, if you start thin taxing mining and AI, which if you're anti-AI right now, you're in the minority. That seems like a rough position to take. But you absolutely have to tax other things. Like if you're manufacturing tobacco products or Zen or candy bars, you need to tax their power consumption, right? Because there's a negative impact. So now you're talking about having a gigantic spreadsheet full of all the different industries and all these different tax brackets of who's getting taxed more for power consumption. Like this absolutely can't go anywhere or it's gross. I can't be more against this. This is a bad idea.
Well, it's the whole ESG concept or choke point 2.0, right? I mean, it's not going away. Governments want to control who is allowed to be in business and treat them differently depending on whether they think they're good or not.
So yeah, I would be very much against this. This would be a bad idea. Even if I was not into crypto or AI, this would be a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, I haven't mentioned anything about zero knowledge proofs lately in this podcast. So I figured I might as well mention something about that. Nebra, which does a zero knowledge proof aggregator, just went live on Ethereum. And what's interesting about what they're doing is they can take multiple ZK proofs and combine them into a single compact proof, which really just saves on the blockchain verification costs. So this, say, it's like a 10x reduction in cost, which is just a good thing for cost to go down. And anytime we're talking about this kind of stuff, so I'll be interested to see what happens. Like we've talked about, zero knowledge proofs are still pretty far out before they're used a lot as they continue to make sure that they're working, but to put them on the mainnet and show that they are working is kind of a cool big step forward.
Yeah, I don't know much about it, but I'll take your word for it.
So jumping over to stablecoins real quick, the Circle CEO just announced that he's expecting tap to pay on iPhone to be able to be used with USDC very soon. And it's not that there's any agreement with Apple. He just saw that Apple opened up their payment infrastructure to third parties. So he thinks a lot of these companies are going to be able to integrate into their wallets a tap to pay that could be based on crypto as well. So that'll be exciting to see if it actually does happen and when it happens.
That's the sort of thing that would open up the adoption for medium of exchange. I mean, like it was so easy to pay in Bitcoin in El Salvador. You know, it's open source, right? So I had a Strike wallet, somebody would have a wallet of Satoshi, or somebody would have a Moon wallet or whatever. And I could just pay them in Satoshis by snapping the QR code, and the transaction would be completed in seconds. And if you tap to pay, it takes away that little bit of friction of scanning a QR code. So I would be all for this. I would think that Apple would put a little Bitcoin on their balance sheet before they open up something like that. But, you know, sometimes they don't realize what they're opening up when they make a change like that. And until some apps develop that allow people to transact like that.
Well, I'm wondering what kind of cut they want from all the money that's transacted that way. I mean, that's always been their big thing, is they take such like a 30% cut on everything that happens on their platform. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, if they take 1.5%, they're about half as much as the credit card guys. So, you know, if you're talking about, you could be doing a lot of transactions, and if you get 1% of everything, that ain't bad.
Yeah, that's true. PayPal's stablecoin PYUSD just made some interesting announcements as well. So they launched on Ethereum back in August of 23. They launched on Solana in May of 24. And now their supply on Solana has surpassed their supply on Ethereum, which is kind of interesting. And it's like 377 million on a Solana versus like 356 on Ethereum. So it's still small compared to the Tethers and of the world and everybody like that. But it's interesting to see that the activity on Solana is picking up even more than on Ethereum.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like Solana is getting a lot of good press, but everything just seems to be in a holding pattern. You know, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of funds flowing in, so it's not reflected in the price. Almost like we're in a bear market where there's a lot of development and a lot of action, but the prices don't really move. Because I mean, with Bitcoin being in their trading range, all these altcoins and stuff seem to be trading in a kind of a similar way. So it would make me think that it would put Solana in a good position when things do come in, that people are going to consider them much more seriously than they were previously.
Solana's had so much activity with the meme coin space because it's so cheap to transact that they were getting a lot of activity, just not really anything worthwhile. I think there's a lot of DePIN projects that are moving to Solana. It'll be interesting to see where that goes, but it's still pretty early from that perspective too.
Gotcha.
So another interesting thing that I saw, the MetaMask card, which is being issued by banks, is a way for you to spend money from your non-custodial wallet using a credit card. So the catch to all this is you have to put the money on Linea, which is a layer 2 on Ethereum. And right now it's only USDT, USDC, and Ethereum. So they're going to pilot this with a few thousand people over in the Europe and UK area and see how it goes. But it is, I guess, kind of cool that you're holding all of your crypto in your own wallet and not having to give it to somebody else to do these transactions. And then when you swipe the card, if there's money available, smart contract, I think, takes care of it, does the transaction, and you're good to go.
I think that this is kind of the next wave, is these companies bridging the gap between existing and traditional finance rails and crypto. It seems like instead of saying, oh, this sandwich shop accepts Ethereum, and so you go and you pay in Ethereum, it's, oh, they pay in dollars, you're holding in Bitcoin. And if you use this card, it does all the transaction for you. And you can live in the Bitcoin world and be denominated in Bitcoin. They can be denominated in US dollars. And then the transaction company is the middleman to make all that go smoothly. And I think there's value in that because there's definitely people that enjoy being heavy in Bitcoin. And it's going to take some companies forever to stop accepting, or not stop accepting dollars. You can't do that, but to start accepting in cryptocurrencies. And especially if you just get into it, it still looks like there's 10,000 different cryptocurrencies, and how do you tell them apart? And it's not really just one, or, you know, maybe two or three. So I think Fold Card, this crypto card, you know, Strike to an extent, you know, they're seeing that there's a need in the market to translate from one to the other. And so if I traveled internationally a lot, or if I owned a house in two different countries, it would be very attractive to hold some spending money in a middle currency or in a digital asset. And if I'm in country A, I can spend that currency and it comes out of Bitcoin. Or if I'm in America and I can spend dollars and it comes out of Bitcoin, and I don't have to really think about it. And the transaction costs are way lower than currency exchanges. So I there's definitely room for this. And it would allow a lot of people to kind of start to move over off of a US dollar standard, and at least like a hybrid unit of account where it's not just US dollars, it might be dollars and Bitcoin. So it seems like a natural progression. I'm all for it.
Well, just to make sure, this MetaMask card is not Bitcoin, right? It's Ethereum, right? A couple of stable coins. But we talked about it a while ago. MetaMask was actually working on trying to integrate the Bitcoin blockchain into their wallet. So I don't know when that's officially going to happen. I have not seen any more news since that. But if they are able to do that, then it probably could be something where, whether you have Bitcoin, I mean, it's on a Ethereum layer two, so you probably have to wrap your Bitcoin and put it on that layer two, but it could still be possible, probably.
Yeah, I just say Bitcoin because Bitcoin makes more sense, because it's really just trying to be money. Ethereum has got more to it. So like, it's almost like having a credit card that you could use US dollars and it takes it out of your Apple stock on your brokerage. And, you know, Ethereum feels different from that standpoint. So I just say Bitcoin, whether, you know, it would be like the Fold card is one thing, and the MetaMask card is crypto, and the Fold card is Bitcoin, right? It's like, so that's just, yeah, I think that's a little bit in the weeds, but yeah.
Yeah. And the Fold card is great, but it's not truly using your deducting from your Bitcoin every time you make a transaction, right? Yes. You can move your Bitcoin over into cash, right? But it's not staying in Bitcoin while you make a transaction. It has to be in cash.
Yeah, I listening to their CEO, I think that's their next move, is allowing you to hold Bitcoin, spend dollars, and they just flip it for you. And you can direct deposit your paycheck, and it'll flip it to Bitcoin every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw. I think they're trying to get to the point where they're going to add authorized users to that, so you could have like a family plan on that as well, and control the spending for your family with the Fold card.
Those things are, you know, more people have to understand the value of Bitcoin before it can be a medium of exchange. But enough people understand Bitcoin enough that, and the value of it, that if someone else values dollars and you value Bitcoin, then if, as long as they grease the rail so that it's easy for you two to transact, then no problem, right? Right now it's like, oh, I like Bitcoin, but every time I want to spend it, I've got to go through the step of converting it into dollars.
Yeah.
And those companies are just taking that step away for people.
All right. Well, I have two more quick things and then we can close things out here pretty soon. So gaming, we haven't mentioned much about gaming, but there is a big announcement on Base. There's a Ethereum gaming arcade company called BSMNT, stands for Basement. They just launched on Base, and it's B3.fun. Right now it has 5 games that you can mint, which they're almost like a layer 3, which is probably getting way too complicated for most people. But Breakout and Crossy Road are 2 of those 5 games that you can go mint and play, which is kind of fun and interesting. It, I mean, anything you can drive more traffic and volume onto crypto, and Base being probably one of the biggest ones on biggest L2s on Ethereum these days, that's kind of fun to see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think gaming and crypto, there's just so much smoke there that there's going to be a fire, and something's going to catch on in a big way. I mean, whenever I'm around, like walking around town or doing whatever, there's so many people playing games on their phones. Like, it's super natural. And also, most of the people doing that are young enough to be into crypto. So it's a real, to me, that's an easy connection that just for some reason hasn't been made yet.
And then Telegram was the other thing that I just saw. So they have just allowed their content creators to earn crypto. And it's really based on kind of users' reactions. And all that is based on what they call their stars currency, which is like an in-app off-chain currency that's tied to the TON coin, which is an actual, I think they're like a top 10 crypto at this point now, right? So you can either get paid in or convert those stars to TON or use it to pay for advertising. But it's kind of a big deal that now you can earn crypto based on what you're creating on social media.
Yeah, I mean, these are the types of things that need to get tried. And you know, like on Noster, you can zap people sats. Like, if you value something and one social media platform allows you to kind of zap stats around or whatever crypto, and another one doesn't, you know, you might lean towards the one that is more aligned with you and what you like. So I think the network effect of crypto really starts to stand out once it reaches into social media and stuff, because if you're not going to create a social media platform where MACTIC is the currency of likes and comments, and you know, you're not going to, if you're rewarded for activity in a crypto that you don't care about, you're not going to be inclined to get on it. So that network effect of having more people supporting Bitcoin or Ethereum versus, you know, the number 20 cryptocurrency is going to really start to show up when companies start to move to stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, anything else that I missed?
No, I mean, I think the only thing we talked about, and we touched on a little bit with the MicroStrategy stock, I listened to this podcast, like these two young quant guys are talking and they are going through MicroStrategy. They're huge MicroStrategy bulls. They, you know, after the 10-to-1 split, MicroStrategy sells price is around 130 a share. And it was like, I mean, I was listening on like 1.5x and they were going through all the options chains and all the other. I mean, the complicatedness of this evaluation of trading a stock. And I'm like, you can just buy Bitcoin and you don't have to spend all this time trying to figure out all these different, you know, timelines and dates and all this stuff. It's like, man, the thing that a lot of people are moving to just buying index funds, because it's like, hey, I don't know what company is going to be successful, but I believe that the stock market is going to go up. So instead of paying a financial advisor 1% plus the management fees, I'm just going to buy the QQQ and pay 0.3% and just collect. That's going to be the same way when it comes to Bitcoin. And it's like, man, I don't need to figure all this crap out. And I don't need to trust all these, the CEO is going to make good decisions and, you know, the industry is not going to get collapse because of AI disruption and, you know, all these different things. Like, no, I just buy Bitcoin and I don't have to think about all this crap. So I think there's an underestimation by most people, because most people just don't do any analysis of stocks, about how easy it is to just buy Bitcoin versus the analysis that goes into the deep dive proper analysis that you should probably do if you're going to take a big position in any stock. Whereas the analysis of Bitcoin is like really not that it's not that tough. Like, so anyway, that was the one thing we hadn't touched on, was kind of my wasting an hour of my life listening to an hour and a half podcast on 1.5x, where I'm like, God, at like 45 minutes in, I'm like, this is just dumb. It just doesn't make sense to do all this work and figure out. I mean, it's one thing for me to listen to them talk about it. They had to spend a ton of time to figure out how all of these mechanisms worked and how all of the stuff behind the curtain works. And I'm like, holy crap, man, you can just straight up buy Bitcoin and then put it in self-custody and then mow the grass.
Never thought we'd call Bitcoin the easy button, but it's pretty much the easy button at this point, right?
I mean, when you start looking in depth and equities and, like, you know, how all that stuff works, it's like, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, no, I agree. The safe way to go at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else to buy. Like, houses are expensive. The dollar's so weak that everything's at an all-time high. Gold's at 2,500. Real estate's crazy high. Rents are high, but not high enough to justify buying rental properties. The commercial real estate, forget about it. Equities, stock market's high. Feels like there's a recession coming. Like, well, I don't know what to buy.
Well, and there's possibly going to be a cap on what you can charge in your rent if you own a house here pretty soon. It's going to be interesting, right? I mean,
if the government, let's see what could go wrong. If the government caps rent and the government provides $25,000 to each first time home buyer, like there's just more bad ideas, you know, like we want houses are unaffordable. So we're going to print money. We're going to give $25,000 to everybody that wants to buy a house for the first time. Okay. Well, every entry level house price just went up $25,000.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Awesome. Well, another interesting week. Look forward to catching up next week, and we'll talk more then.
Sounds good, man.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.